Welcome to the podcast of Mosaic Church, celebrating diversity within community.
All right, well, it's awesome to see everybody, and I don't think the rain's supposed to last all day, so I hope not. I thought it was just supposed to be a little bit. We do need it. But we can use it when it's a little colder this week and nobody wants to be outside. Although I did enjoy yesterday. And so thank you guys. A lot of you guys have been praying with us. A couple families in our church body, in our church family, got encouraging news from doctors this week, which is good. So we're thankful. And there'll be weeks when that's not the case, and we'll still be thankful. But today we celebrate. And, so we're going to be in 1 Peter 2, and we're going to have a discussion that sometimes is gets mixed reviews in church settings. And it's that conversation of works and doing stuff. Okay. And so what I want us to focus on, we're going to start here, we're going to end here, but what I want us to focus on, the words I want you to hear, words I want you to meditate on and think about through this message, but then also throughout the week, that's kind of the thing I want to stick in your head, is what we do matters as much as what we believe. And I know that like jolts against sometimes our good evangelical DNA, because we read Paul's words, and we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning, but we read Paul's words that says we're only justified by faith alone, and I would absolutely affirm that. But what we do matters as much as what we believe, because what we do proves what we believe. And we're going to flesh this out a little bit in Scripture, because that has a big bearing on church life, on how church life functions, flows, and moves forward. In fact, if it only matters about what we believe, then there isn't a whole lot of reason for us to do much, right? And I think we all feel that tension. And so what we want to do is frame this correctly, because as we talk about over the coming weeks and months and maybe even years about what God has for Mosaic and where he's moving us, one of the things that we have to be aware of is that there is a being a part of that call, that we are children of God. We are people who are saved, not because of any work that we did, but because of the work of Jesus Christ on the cross. But we also have to acknowledge that God calls us to do something, that God moves us forward in a place and in a space for us to reveal himself to the world. And so there's tension in that. In fact, since I've been at Mosaic, and some people who have visited here in the past like really had a problem with any kind of acknowledgement of that. Like, it's only because of God, what he's done. And I would absolutely say you're right. But we're gonna talk about some scriptures. So what we do matters as much as what we believe, because it proves what we believe. A pastor, and you guys have heard me say this before, but he said it in a way that I really thought made tons of sense. One of those things deals with the root of salvation. That what we believe in what Christ has done is the root of salvation, but our action is the fruit of that salvation, and it requires both. And so one of the reasons that we got here was because I was watching the Olympics over the last couple weeks. Have you guys been watching that? No, not really. I'm not a huge fan of the Summer Olympics, but I do really enjoy the Winter Olympics. Bobsledding, lugeing, like that kind of stuff looks fun. I always fool myself, like, I could do that. Then I see one of those crashes, I'm like, I do not want to do that. I remember a few years ago when it snowed, and it really, before the snow came down, like it happens a lot in the South, a lot of ice hit the ground. And so the road in front of my house, if you've never been to my house is at the sort of at the top of a hill. We're not at the very top, we're kind of just as it starts to go down, but we're pretty much at the top. And so everybody comes to our house when we have frozen weather, because we have a really great hill in the backyard. And then if there's enough frozen stuff on the roadway, then the road is a blast. And it ends in a cul-de-sac. We got a bunch of friends down there. And so we were doing it, and I was running. And I remember it took me like four times because as I started to go, I was like, I don't want to do this. And so I stopped and I back up because the kid in my head, which Roy, you can appreciate this, right? The kid in my head, and I think I still am, was just saying, just run and jump and flop on top of the thing. And my back said, that would be a bad idea. I did it, and my back was right. The kid in my head was wrong. But it took me like four goes because I didn't want to do it. But anyway, so I love the Olympics. And as I'm watching this, and I don't know if you guys know, if you didn't watch it or follow any of it, but a couple of first things happened this week, or a couple records were set. For the first time, maybe ever, I really don't remember this one, but there was like a cross-country skiing thing that the U.S. won. Now, usually that's dominated by like the Scandinavian countries, because in my mind, they cross-country ski wherever they go. That's probably not true, but they generally win that, and the U.S. won one for the first time. There was a young lady from Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic. I don't think Czechoslovakia exists anymore, so if you're younger than me, you probably have no clue what I'm talking about. But I think the Czech Republic, there's a young lady who won, the first female ever to win two gold medals in two separate events in the Olympics. So she won one for some kind of snowboarding thing and one for some ice skating thing. So she was the first person to ever do that, or female to ever do that. The U.S. men won a bobsledding thing, which was cool. There were a couple of curling. We won curling for the first time ever, right? People really get into curling this year. It used to, you know, I remember like 12 years ago, it was a joke. It's like, you know, what is this? How is this even a sport? Now, like, people are really into it. Now, when the U.S. wins, we're really into it, right? But we love those kinds of things. I remember, I'm a Clemson fan, so forgive me for those of you guys who aren't, but I remember sitting in my living room about a year and a couple months ago and watching Clemson win the national championship, which to me was phenomenal because I was like four the last time they won. So I don't even get to remember it, but this one I get to remember. And so that was really cool. We love record breaks. Remember like the big home run chase of like, I don't remember what year that was, like 2001, 2002, somewhere around there. Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, they're chasing this most home runs in a year record. And then Barry Bonds a few years later was chasing Babe Ruth. Like, we love to see that kind of do it. Why do we love to see that? Because we've witnessed a part of history. And the people who do it, like, you'll see them, like, they come to tears. And it makes sense because they've done something that's going to live on past them, unless someone breaks it, of course, but it lives on past who they are. It goes on beyond them. It doesn't, it's no longer just them and they pass away. Have any of you guys ever seen the movie? It's kind of new. I think it came out this past holiday season, called Coco. Anybody check that out? Okay, so one person. Oh, two. Okay, thank you. So it's this story about this little Mexican boy and his family every year is celebrating Día de los Muertos, which is the Day of the Dead. And it's similar to the church calendar holiday that comes the day after Halloween. It's All Saints Day. If you've ever attended a more mainline denomination, on All Saints Day or on the Sunday at which they celebrate that, they may read all the names of the saints who have passed away that year or over the last decade or whatever it may be. And so that's their time to kind of lean into that and remember that. And the now I'm going to try to say it again because I do not speak Spanish. But the Day of the Dead, that's how I'm going to say it. And there's this story of this little boy, and he doesn't really understand it. But through it, it begins to tell a story of once that all their family resides in this afterlife type of place. And the only time they ever really go away is when they're forgotten. And then they're gone. And so there's this idea of, like, we have to remember our family. This idea that things have to move forward. Now, I'm not integrating that into Christian theology. But what I would say is that all of us want that to some degree, right? We don't want anything that we've done to die the second that we cease to exist on the earth. I want what I've taught my kids to live on. I want them to teach it to their generations. At some point on some day, sometime in the late 40s or early 50s, my granddad accepted Christ at the age of like 18 years old in a little Pentecostal Holiness church in Greenwood, South Carolina. And it transformed my family's history. My dad becomes a pastor. As a result, my dad goes to a Pentecostal Holiness school, meets my mom. I'm there. There's something that happened that lived on, and somebody shared that with my granddad. So a piece of that person that lived on, we love that thought, right? Am I the only one? What I would suppose is that there was a group of people in the upstate of South Carolina 15 years ago or so that began a church. It was originally called Cornerstone and eventually took on the name of Mosaic Community Fellowship, and now we just call it Mosaic Church, that hoped that something would begin that would live on past them. And I think all of us have engaged in that to this day. Like, we hope that whatever it is that we do moves on past us. All this is setting up to say that we want our name, our accomplishments, what we've done and who we are, not to end when we end on this earth, but to continue on. And this is not antithetical or against Scripture. We are absolutely justified only by what we believe, our faith. Faith that Jesus did it for us, that we didn't have to do it and that we couldn't do it and that Jesus did it. And that's our justification. However, we also are going to hold in that same place the tension of what James said. That faith without works is what? It's dead faith. It's dead faith. And I don't know if any of you have ever been in a church where it really felt like there was dead faith. I've been in Pentecostal churches where I felt that was probably true. That if there is no outworking of what God is doing in your life that others can see and experience and feel and touch, then I would question if it's real. And we're going to go through some scriptures so that you don't think that we're teaching heresy up here, okay? Because Jesus almost said some of those same words. So hopefully you have. If you haven't, we'll give you a second to flip over to 1 Peter, as I do. 1 Peter chapter 2, and we're going to start in verse 11. And this is going to kind of be our jumping off point. This was Peter writing some instructions to the church, instructions that still are applicable to us today. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. If you didn't bring a Bible, the words will be up on the screen here behind me. But beginning in verse 11, Peter's talking. He's talking to a group of people who do not live in an isolated Christian society, okay? He's writing to people, group of people who are really the minority. It's interesting. We're fighting for, as a church, we're really in this kind of place where we're like, do we want to fight for our political well-being so that we're known in the public square? And Peter's writing to a group of people who really were the minority. Like, they were not known. In fact, they were ostracized. They were cast out. In a lot of places, they were persecuted. And these are the words that Peter writes this into. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits us. Submit yourself to the Lord's sake, for the Lord's sake, to every human authority, whether the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God and honor the emperor. These are words that Peter wrote to this group of people. And it's wrapped up in this idea that what you do is proving what you believe. It's showing others that what you believe is real so that they could also come to that faith in Jesus. The two are not opposed to each other. It's not heresy to talk about it in church. We have to do. And we have to do good. In fact, Peter even brings Acts, remember, when the sheep that we read about in Acts a few weeks ago. But in Acts, remember, when the sheep was let down and drawn back up and the Spirit was speaking to him saying, go and eat. And Peter said, I can't eat. I've never eaten anything unholy in my life. And God said, don't ever call anything unholy that the Lord has made. Don't call anything unclean that God has made with his hands. And there's this idea that in doing that, he told Peter, you have complete freedom. Freedom from this bondage that was given to you by the law, which I gave you, which was good, but now I've come to abolish the law. So there's this law thing that's happening, and it's no longer applicable to Peter because Jesus has come and fulfilled it. Not that it wasn't good before, it was necessary before, but now Jesus has come and fulfilled that, and he's now giving him freedom. And Peter brings that freedom back into this text and says, you got freedom. You can move with God however he wants you to move. But he said, don't use your freedom for yourself. In fact, make yourself a slave to God. You're not a slave to sin. You're not a slave to anybody else. But he said, commit yourself as a slave to God. Don't use your freedom to tear down your brother. In fact, do good works so that it may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits. There's this idea that doing is incorporated with their belief. It proved their belief. We have an opportunity as individuals. We have an opportunity as a family of believers here in this area of Pickens for our name to live beyond us. But to do that, it's going to require that we do things, and we do them maybe even differently than what other folks are doing. It's going to require boldness on the part of the church. And we've named, and we're not going to go through and name them again, but we've named tons of things that other people have done and the other ways that the church is doing things around the U.S., around the upstate. I mean, they're kind of similar. And it may take us doing church a tad bit differently. It may take us doing it the exact same. I don't know. What I do know is it is going to take us following God wherever it is that he's leading us as a group of people and as individuals, wherever it is that God is leading us. If it's to do things completely different and to do nothing but invest in a younger generation that we don't get or understand so that our name lives on beyond us, so that God's name is what's glorified, so that we're doing something that doesn't die out with us. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but a lot of churches have this issue, but the Southern Baptists are actually have noticed that a lot of their churches have been around for a while, have now just become older, the populations have become older. No one new is really coming in the doors, and so what they've done is said, well, this isn't good, but we don't, you know, God loves all these folks involved, even the folks who have been at this church for 50 years. And so one of the things we're going to do is how can we plant a legacy so this church isn't, so they'll take the church, the existing people, help bring in new leadership to reach out to the community that exists there now, but still do it in such a way that honors the group that began this thing, even though it looks completely different, which is a beautiful thing. Other denominations should take suit. I mean, I've never been a part of a Southern Baptist church in my life and never been a part of the denomination, but I think that's a fantastic thing. Because one thing that we know, and one thing that I can tell you is true, is I came up through church in the 80s and early 90s, and I can tell you without a doubt that people communicate, learn, and hear things differently now than we did when I was a young boy, right? Like when I was a kid, it was not uncommon for our pastor to preach for an hour. It wasn't uncommon for us to sing 30, 45 minutes of songs. And what I can tell you now is there's a younger generation that have been glued into video games and computers and Twitter everything that you can only get in short snippets, they don't hear it that way anymore. In fact, they tune out. And when they tune out, when they get to the age where they can make their own choice, they don't come. And then when they don't come, they don't hear the gospel. And when they don't hear the gospel, it's hard. God can still transform lives, but it's hard. And so it's important that we have this conversation to say, what is it that we do? How do we show this? So not only, we know what to show, right? Like we, none of us, most of us in this room, without knowing every single person's faith and faith journey in this room, most of us know that it's by faith that we're saved. It's through Jesus Christ and what he did on the cross and how important that is. But if we can't share that in a way that other people hear it, then what good is it? Billy Graham did a great, had a great ministry. And I, hopefully you guys agree. If you don't, that's cool too. But Billy Graham had an amazing ministry. His ministry was largely built around rallies and presenting the gospel at these rallies. In a time and place when this was brand new, Billy blazed the trails in a lot of ways. In fact, Billy was filling baseball arenas before the Beatles were. We're coming to Christ because Billy's gospel and hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people were coming to Christ because Billy said, it's not just going to be in the little schoolroom looking church. We're going to take it out someplace else. And it was welcomed, it was celebrated, and people came out. And now we're in a place where that has become commonplace. It's become normal. If you know anything about, if you remember anything about your youth, what I remember about mine is I didn't want to do what was normal for my mom and dad. I wanted something new. I wanted something different. I wanted to change things up. I didn't want there just to be, you know, one guy. My granddad and my grandma led singing, is what they called it. It wasn't worship, it was singing. At their church, my grandma would play the piano or the organ, and my granddad would, and she would sing out, and my granddad would sing out, and neither one of them could hit the right key to save their life, but they sang with gusto. And the whole rest of the crowd joined in. And when I grew up, like, I didn't want that. Like, give me some instruments. Jazz it up a bit, you know? That's what I was interested in. And so the church that I went to did. Lots of people came. What is it? And that may still be the case, but what I'm saying is somebody at some point tuned into what God was saying. Is God said, you have to do something different, and they did it. And it reached people. It reached a new generation of folks who did not want to hear it. At some point, somebody went into a drug den and shared Christ with some people in California who would eventually believe that Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life, that there was only one way to God, and that was through Jesus. And a whole bunch of hippies got saved in Southern California in the 60s. Denominations sprang out of that. If you've ever been a part or gone to a Vineyard church, that church exists because someone went to someone who didn't look, act, or probably smell like them and shared Jesus with them. They did such good in front of other people. But how do you, that's the question I want us to wrestle with, is how do you get in front of people? Because we can share the best message all day long. We have a great message to share. It's very simple. We read Peter's words in my Sunday night group a couple weeks ago. Peter said about three paragraphs of words about who Jesus was, and 3,000 people came to know him that day. How do you get in front of the people? I think it's just this simple, that we just have to, because we're in front of them all day long, right? We're in front of different types of people. I'm in front of people in my own workplace who know Christ, and I'm in front of people in my own workplace who claim to know Christ, but they're in some sort of cohabitation kind of thing. They're not really living it out, and when you talk about it, they don't really believe. It's just, it was kind of grandma's belief, and so they grew up Christian kind of thing, the cultural kind of thing that we're used to in the South. I've been in front of Hindus, right? Y'all remember Sam Pat, my buddy Sam Pat, and I had an office next door to him. I'm in front of people who abuse drugs on a weekly or sometimes daily basis. We're in front of people. The key for us, I believe, lies in what Peter's saying here. Live such good lives in front of them that even though they're accusing you of doing wrong, they know it has no foundation. That by the way that you live, by the things that you do, it's going to prove who God is. Flip over to Philippians. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. There's this idea that Peter writes about that what we do is sprung forth by God. Okay? Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, and you guys know that you can't obey without doing something, right? Okay. My sons don't just have to believe their room needs to be cleaned, right? They actually have to clean the room. Okay. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only my presence, but now so much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. There's this idea that we're bringing God into what we do. One of the reasons that we're talking about this, and we're going to talk about it for a couple weeks, next week we're going to talk about the sacrament of work. That God gave us work. And that in working is very sacramental. It's very holy. It's set apart by God. That it is God within us that wills us to move and to do good. It's not theology that's built upon, well, by doing good, I'm going to gain God's favor. You already have God's favor. God already loves you. God already's given his son for you. God already forgives you. Now just live and act into that. And I just want to end real quick, because the whole reason we're talking about this is we want to see changed lives. But if we can't grab a hold of how to get in front of people, live our lives in such a way that their life is changed, that God does reveal himself to others through what he's doing in our lives, they will never see that. Tom was sharing with me this morning about a time where he got to be a part, small part of a young man who is now a pastor somewhere else, of his faith. Most of that seemed to be just knowing Tom. Tom's not a man of tons of words. Had to be more of just living in front of a young man, knowing that he was there for him, willing to be there to cry on his shoulder, to hear about what's going on. A lot of times, that's all it takes. But if you don't believe me, if you don't believe Peter or Paul, hear these words of Jesus in Matthew 5. There's this really popular text that we focus a lot on the beginning and not so much on the end, but Matthew 5, Jesus coming out of the Beatitudes, and now we're moving into the salt and light passage. Matthew 5, starting in verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. Notice this is Jesus, God in the flesh, talking to all those who are listening. And what did he not say? He did not say, I am the salt of the earth, right? He said, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how is it going to be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. Again, he did not say, I am the light of the world. He said, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light so shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. I think Peter stole a little bit. He probably would have gotten a C or D on this paper because he did a little stealing from Jesus here when he wrote his letter later on. But he said, let your light so shine before others they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. There's this supposition that you're already doing good deeds. So don't keep it to yourself. Many times we just want to keep it to ourselves. I don't want the glory. I'm humble. And there's beauty in humility. There really is. In fact, one of the guys, I don't know if you guys are familiar with John Perkins, but I love to hear John talk and I love to read John's words. John Perkins had some leadership in the civil rights movement. And then he just transitioned that because he said part of the what's going on between the races in America back in the 60s has more to do with the discipleship model than it does with knowing. And so he focused all of his efforts after that on just how do we disciple people well. And so I love John. In fact, as I kind of read into that, John's words speak a lot too. Like, what does it look like to just live for God and let that be what transforms people? Not saying you have to like white people, you have to like black people, you have to like yellow people and red people and blue people and green people. It's like, how do you just get to the point where you just love God and let that be what transforms who you are? And John said some words about Billy Graham about how humble he was every time they met and how gracious he was and the humility that came from Billy Graham. But Billy Graham did something right, and he did it in front of a bunch of people. There's a way to be humble, but be true to what God says out of his own mouth when he was here on earth. Let your light shine so shine before men that they see this. Because when they see this, they're going to glorify your Father in heaven because of what you're doing. So do it in front of them. And so there's this idea that we have to do good works. Not because we're going to gain salvation from God. We already have that. But as a revelation, as a fruit of that salvation within us. And then we have to do it in front of our people so they can see it. And so they know that God is good. We're in front of them every day. Let's not put a cover on it like the person with the lamp. Let's take the cover off so it shines in front of everybody. It's not bragging on you. You didn't have the idea to do it, right? What else did Paul say? There's nothing good I could ever do in myself. It's God who's going to do it all through me. And so when you do good things, you can let other people see it. And they try to give you, I didn't do it so that you say that because I'm a bad person. I mean, I really didn't even want to. I did it only because God's doing it in me. There's an easy way to get around that humility aspect of it because it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with God. And as a church, that's our encouragement too. Like, we have to let our light so shine before people that they see God's good deeds and they glorify him. Part of doing that means we can't just do it in front of other Christians, right? In front of other believers. You don't put a bunch of flashlights in one room and let them all shine on each other, right? It's no good. You have to go where? Into the dark. Right? With whatever you're using it for. In this situation, they're using it to preserve food. Now we use it to flavor food. Both scenarios, it does no good. Gather it in itself in a sack. What does it have to do? Beyond the food. So today, as we move forward and continue to worship God, we have another song. We're going to, like we do every week, we're going to come to the table and share in communion. Like where we really have to focus our energy is allowing God to move in us. Like first off, letting him do it. And then you just do it in front of other people so they can see it. And as a church, like what is God calling us to do as a church? Like how can we do that in front of other people? Because we know how to do this well, but we're a bunch of flashlights shining in a room right now, right? Like how do we get out from that as a church? I think it's an interesting conversation. I don't know that anybody that we have tons of really great examples for that, but I believe that God is a creative and moving God. And he can show us that. So I pray that you will pray with me on how exactly that happens. And so today we come to the table and we remember the one who spoke these words to us. We remember the fact that we don't have to do to get God to love us. We can just do as a result and as a fruit of what he's already done in us. And so we come to the table with that on our hearts and our minds this morning. And so I'm going to pray and I'm going to invite you to stand and sing and share in communion. But if you would pray with me. Jesus, we love you. We're thankful that we don't have to do anything to earn our salvation because we'd be in a heap of trouble. But God, we thank you that because of what you did, you give us freedom from having to do anything to being able to do something. So that what we do lives on past us because of your eternal presence and your eternal nature. May I do things now with my kids that will live on. May they know that you're a good father, and may their kids know, and may their kids know. And may generations go down the road knowing and loving you because of the way that I raise my boys. May we be a church and a people and a family in this part of Pickens County in such a way that generations from now, people are still showing your love and celebrating who you are because of foundations that you laid 15 years ago that you're going to lay today, that you're going to continue to do, God. That's our prayer. And so, God, we thank you that you give us the ability to do that. We thank you that you have done all the work that's necessary for salvation. And now we can walk in freedom to just do things to show people what a great God you are. We love you, God. Dwell in our midst this morning as we worship you. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you would like more information, please visit us at www.mosaiceasley.org.